The Colgate Ask It Basket, on the air with Jim McWilliams, radio's original question and answer man. Jim has picked four contestants from the volunteers in the audience. They're all raring to go. Well, now let's see. They are a sailor, a student, a stenographer, and a department store buyer. And they're all competing in this friendly and amusing contest for three cash prizes and answering questions that come from your hometown and mine. And here he comes, Genial Jim McWilliams.
Thank you and good evening, everybody, and a big welcome to you all. Are your hands all clean?
Yeah.
Are your faces clean?
Yeah.
And I'm sure your teeth are clean, too, if you use Colgate Dental Cream, am I right, Del?
Absolutely, Jim. They're double clean, because Colgate Dental Cream does double duty. First, Colgate's active yet safe polishing agent brings out the natural brilliance of teeth, makes them sparkle. Second, Colgate's penetrating foam gets between teeth, helps the toothbrush clean out neglected food particles that often cause unpleasing breath. So, friends, remember, get teeth really clean, outside and in between. Change to Colgate Dental Cream. Buy a tube tomorrow. All right, Jim, on with our Ask It Basket.
Okay, Del, but first I've got to give myself a couple of squeaks on the buzzer. Last week I said that Brooklyn was not a borough of the city of New York. It is. I'm sorry, all you loyal Brooklynites, and thanks for calling it to my attention. And now, for Colgate Ask It Basket number one, our first contestant, a very charming young lady, comes to the microphone. Your name, please?
Sylvia Fisher.
Sylvia Fisher. Where are you from, Sylvia?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn? And what is your business?
Stenographer.
You're a stenographer, all right. Will you choose a question and hand it over? We're very happy to have you on this program, Miss Fisher. And this question comes from Bordentown, New Jersey. Miss Celia A. Gaskell asks, if you were in the market for a ruminant, R-U-M-I-N-A-N-T, would you go to a stockyard, a bargain counter, or a secondhand bookshop? Right into the microphone. And speak right up.
What is that?
Would you go to a stockyard, a bargain counter, or a secondhand bookshop for a ruminant?
For a ruminant? How do you spell that?
R-U-M-I-N-A-N-T.
A stockyard.
You'd go to a stockyard. Why? Well, you guessed it correctly. That is correct. All right. Thank you. Is a cow or a camel or a deer or any animal that chews its cud. And our next contestant is a sailor in the United States Navy. What's your name, sailor?
Peter Wershing.
Peter Wershing. Where are you from, Peter?
USS Helena, Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Well, we're very glad to have you on this program. What's your rate?
Fine, first class.
Right into the microphone.
Fine, first class.
Well, choose a question there, Pete, and hand it over here. Thank you very, very much. Now, this question comes from Arlington, Massachusetts. Mrs. I.M. Shulkin asks, if you were told that your parsimonious proclivities predominate perceptibly, would you be a mountain climber, a miser, or a music lover if you were parsimonious? If you were parsimonious, would you be a mountain climber, a miser, or a music lover? Take your pick, Pete.
No, I think I'd be a...
A mountain climber, a miser, or a music lover?
A miser.
A miser. You've guessed correctly. All right. A miser is correct. All right. Our next contestant, your name?
Thelma Furman.
Miss or Mrs.?
Mrs.
And where are you from?
Bronx, New York.
The Bronx in New York. And what is your business?
Buyer.
Your Bronx friends are out there giving you a cheer.
I hope it's not a Bronx cheer.
They're not the Bronx cheer. No, they're just giving you a cheer. Will you choose a question? And I'm very happy to have you here. And this question comes from Glenwood, Iowa. Arthur Lloyd wants to know, which is longer, a yard or a meter?
A meter.
A meter. How much longer? Do you have any idea? You are correct.
I don't know.
You don't know. All right. Well, a meter is 39.37 inches, and that's a meter, and a yard, 36 inches. All right. And our next contestant, your name?
Carter Strong.
Carter Strong. Where are you from, Carter?
I'm from Winchester, Virginia.
Winchester, Virginia. And some of your fellow Virginians are giving you the Virginian cheer. And we're very happy to have you here. What is your business?
I'm a student in the Shenandoah Valley Academy.
Well, choose a question, Carter, and hand it over here. Good luck to you. This question comes from, let me see, Springfield, Ohio. H.E. Bogus wants to know if your tympanum needed attention or correction, would you send for a dentist, an ear specialist, a drummer, or a mechanic? If your tympanum needed attention, would you...
My tympanum?
Mm-hmm. Would you send for a drummer, an ear specialist, a dentist, or a mechanic?
I'd send for a drummer.
You send for a drummer. I am sorry. Who would he send for, audience? An ear specialist, for the tympanum is the eardrum. All right, and here is Asket Basket number 2, and here comes Miss Sylvia Fisher, our very petite sonographer from Brooklyn, New York, choosing a question from Minnetonka, New Jersey. Mrs. Mary Costa wants you to translate the following proverb. It is the final bit of dried grass that affixed to the burden previously acquired induces fracture of the dorsal portion of the ship of the desert.
Mm.
Now, let's take... That might sound a bit confusing, but it's really very simple. Now, what is a ship of the desert? Into the microphone, please. What is a ship of the desert? You give up on that? It's not a Chesterfield.
No. I guess not.
What is it?
I don't know.
You give up on that. Say good and loud, I give up.
I give up.
Well, well, well. What is it, audience? Yes, sir. It's the last... This means it's the last straw that breaks the camel's back. All right. Next contestant, please. Come along, sailor. Come up here, Peter, and choose a question. That's the stuff. Now, this question, Pete, comes from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dorothy R. Walsh wants you to... Please, just let the question there. That's it. Let's stay right there, can you name the 3 musical numbers suggesting the 3 colors of the American flag? Now, can you name these 3 musical numbers suggesting the 3 colors of the American flag? The first one.
He's playing hi-ho.
Hi-ho, all right. What's that from?
From the dwarves.
Yeah, well, what's the name of it? Snow what?
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
All right. All right. Now, what colors does that suggest of the flag? That's white, doesn't it?
White.
All right, white. Now, the next one. You know what that is? What is it, audience? Beautiful Lady in Blue. All right, that's blue. Now, let's try the next one.
Melody. Beautiful Melody.
Beautiful Melody. Well, what color would you say? We've had white and blue. Now, what's the other one?
Lady in Red.
Attaboy! Hurrah for the Navy. All right. And here comes Mrs. Furman. Now, from West Palm Beach, Florida, H.M. Young wants you to pronounce the following word. Now, be careful. This is more or less of a trick question. Here is the word. S-O-M-E-T-I-M-E-S. What does that spell?
Could you spell it over, please?
S-O-M-E-T-I-M-E-S. Please, audience.
Sometimes.
That is correct. All right. Come along, Mr. Strong. Our student, choose a question there, young lad. That's this stuff. And this question comes from the Bronx in New York. And Jack Brandon wants to know, how many hearts are there on the 10 of hearts?
There are 12 hearts in the 10 of hearts.
That is correct. Will you explain that, please?
There are two. There's one underneath.
Right the microphone.
There's one underneath each number, and there are 10 other hearts in the 10 of hearts.
That is correct. 12 is correct. All right. And that finishes Asket Basket number 2. Now, Dell, how about those scores? We want to see who's ahead in this Colgate Asket Basket game.
Sure, Jim. But here's a word everyone is interested in, too. You know, there are many reasons why some people succeed in business and romance. Why many others fail is often obvious. It's because they have unpleasing breath, that's why. And as your own dentist will verify, improperly cleaned teeth are often the cause. So to avoid offending, you'd better clean your teeth 2 ways. And for this double job, use Colgate Dental Cream. Colgate's active foam gets between teeth, helps your toothbrush clean out food particles that often cause unpleasing breath. And Colgate's safe polishing agent polishes teeth to natural brilliance, makes them sparkle. So clean your breath while cleaning your teeth. Two jobs, one price. Start using Colgate Dental Cream tomorrow. All right, folks, here are the scores at the end of Ask It Basket number two. Mrs. Selma Furman is leading with a score of 200 points.
And there's the bell for Ask It Basket number three, and Miss Fisher is at the microphone choosing a question which comes from Aurora, Illinois. Margaret Klessen wants to know, in that part of the United States where it is used, when does daylight saving time go into effect, and how long is it enforced? Now, when does daylight savings time go into effect?
The last Sunday
in April.
The last Sunday in April.
Uh-huh. Now, and when is it over?
The last Sunday in September.
That is correct. That is correct. The last Sunday in April, and it's over the last Sunday in September. All right, here comes the Navy. All right, oh boy. Pete has chosen a question which comes from Greenville, Texas. Mrs. Mabel Bruce wants you to give the meaning of the following alphabetical combination. FBI.
FBI is the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
That is correct. All right. Now, this might be a little bit hard, but I don't think it will be for you, Pete. How about the NYA?
Is the National Veterans Association?
No, that's no. NYA.
Oh.
All right, stay with us, sailor.
National. Y.
Yeah. The National what? Well, I'm sorry, we have to go along on that. Let's try. What is it, audience? National Youth Administration. Now, how about the USNRF?
United States Naval Fleet Reserve.
Well, we had to turn. All right. I'm going to turn that around for you, sir. USNFR. What is that?
United States Naval Fleet Reserve.
All right, that is correct. All right, we had it to be. And now comes Mrs. Furman. Now from New Albany, Indiana, Mrs. Bessie Goodup wants you to give the sum of the numbers mentioned in the following song title. She sends this musical question. Now the first is... You have any idea?
Seven.
I'm sorry. What is it, audience?
Three
little fishes. All right, now let's try the next.
Two.
All right, that's three and two. All right, now the next. Give up on that one?
Seven.
Seven what?
Seven's a lucky number.
Seven's a lucky number, yes, but what's the name of that song?
I can't think of
Three it. Little fishes first, two sleepy people next, that's three and two, and the next one is what? What's the name of the song?
I don't know the name.
Give up on that. What is it, audience? Two cigarettes in the dark, and seven was the correct answer, but we can't give you full credit. All right, there you are, and here comes Carter Strong. Come along. Choose a question, Carter. Our student from Winchester chooses a question from Harding, Massachusetts. Esther A. Hinckley wants to know, what are three copper or bronze coins used in English money? What are the three copper or bronze coins used in English money?
The penny.
Yes.
And the 2 cent piece.
Well, I fear you're guessing a bit there, Carter.
Right,
a penny. Well, a penny is worth 2 cents in our money. Now, what corresponds to a 1 cent piece. That is, 1 cent in our money.
Pence.
I'm sorry about that. Penny, a penny, and one more, worth a quarter of a cent.
Farthing.
A farthing. All right. All right. A quarter of a penny. All right. And here... Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. And there's the bell for Colgate Asket Basket. Number 4, Sylvia Fisher, comes to the microphone choosing a question which comes from Appleton, New York. Mrs. John Callaghan wants you to tell our friends how old must a man be to become president of the United States? That's a very easy question. How old must he be?
There's no certain age.
There's no certain age?
No.
Could a man 21 years of age become president?
No. I think he has to be past 30.
He has to be in his 30s.
30.
I see. Well, I'm sorry about that. You're going to get a squeeze. How old, audience?
35.
But, friends, there's no age limitation on a winning smile. Sparkling teeth belong to people of every age who use Colgate Dental Cream. You see, Colgate's safe polishing agent erases cloudy surface film, makes teeth sparkle. And Colgate's penetrating foam helps the toothbrush remove hidden food particles from tiny crevices between teeth. So, for cleaner teeth, brighter smiles, start using Colgate Dental Cream tomorrow. All right, Jim, we'll continue with basket 4.
All right, here comes our sailor up to the microphone choosing a question which comes from, let me see, this one comes from Detroit, Michigan. Mrs. Harry Volker, this is sort of a trick question. What one thing do you have, find, take, pass, do, mark, waste, kill, and make? What one thing do you have... And you find, and you take, and you pass, and you do, and you mark, and you waste, and you kill, and you make.
Oh, time!
Right! Come back, you sir. That was time. Time is correct. All right, that's fine. Thank you. All right, and now, Mrs. Furman... From Boston, Massachusetts, Miss Frances W. Sprague wants you to identify the following quotation. I quote, as idle as a painted ship upon a painted ocean. Please, audience. Some more that is in a good south wind sprung up behind the albatross did follow, and every day for food or play came to the mariner's hollow.
It's the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
That is correct. All right, that is fine. Thank you. All right, and here comes Mr. Strong. Choose a question, Mr. Strong. And this question comes from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Miss Kitty Gallagher says this song that you sometimes hear at weddings is from which of the following operas? Robin Hood, Carmen, Romeo and Juliet, or the Mikado. Here's the tune. Is it from Robin Hood, Carmen, Romeo and Juliet, or the Mikado? Take your pick. Please, audience, take your pick.
Repeating those.
Robin Hood, Carmen, Romeo and Juliet, or the Mikado.
Robin Hood.
Robin Hood is correct. All right.
Hey, wait a minute, Jim. You might let me ring the bell this time, will you?
All right, go ahead.
Well, let me have it, then. Hear ye. It's Jim McWilliams' Anything Can Happen basket.
Step right up, folks. Listen closely. Hurry. It's amazing. It's colossal. It's just downright funny, maybe. Because anything can happen now. All set, let it go. And here comes Miss Sylvia Fisher. Now, you are a radio actress... And you have one word to say, and that is ah. Ah, no more, no less. But there are three different situations. They're all different. And remember, put yourself in the proper frame of mind for your big dramatic moment. Are you all ready?
Ready.
Are you ready? All right.
Yes.
Now, you have just finished a nice, long, cool drink on a real hot day.
Ah.
Oh, into the microphone.
Ah.
All right. The doctor says... Open your mouth and say, ah! All right. And your best beau has just given you a sweet kiss. And here comes the Navy. All right. Choose a question there, Pete. Come on, choose one. That's the stuff. Anyway, they're all right. Well, now, you're now a musical comedy actor. This question comes from Denver, Colorado, and Hattie Sorens wants to see how well you can act in a musical comedy. You are one of the leading characters, and your lines will tell you, the songs will tell you your lines. Now, the curtain. It's a beautiful midsummer's night. Find John and Molly in a garden. And these two things in particular help to put John in a very romantic mood.
Moonlight and roses.
Oh, I know, but real, real dramatic.
Moonlight and roses.
All right, that's fine. So? So John proposes to Molly saying,
let me call you sweetheart. I'm in love with you.
Run into the microphone.
Let me call you sweetheart. I'm in love with you.
All right. Now tell me, after listening to the third song, did Molly say yes or no to John's proposal several years ago?
Well, it's Molly and me, and I guess it's yes.
Yes, just Molly and me, and the baby makes three. All right, all right. All right. Thank you, Sailor. That's great. All right. And here comes Miss Furman. Now, Mrs. Furman, in this musical test, we're going to combine a group of musical numbers, motifs we call them, which will tell you the story of a modern screen classic. Now, the first is... What is that?
It's a spring song.
All right, that's the spring motif. Now, the next number... I'm sorry about that. What is it, Autumn?
Autumn.
Spanish town, all right. It's spring in a Spanish town. Now? What is that, please? Yes?
Wait a minute.
All right. Just... Light the microphone.
Give it again, will you? It's from the opera Il Trovatore.
I know.
Pagliacci.
Pagliacci. No, I'll try another one. Anyone. It's all right. What is it all in? All right, Carmen, the Toreador song, and that's the bull. Now the next is... You give up on that?
Wait a minute. Let me hear that once again.
What is that, audience? The flowers that bloom in the spring color. Now the next. You know what that is?
No.
What is it, audience? Tree. That's the tree motive. Now, the next one. What is that? Give up on that? What is it, audience? All right, we had the spring, the Spanish town, the bull, the flower, the tree, and the bumblebee. What's the movie classic? What is it, audience? Ferdinand the Bull. All right, next please, and here comes Mr. Strong, and this question comes from Brooklyn, New York, and Philip Shinen wants to find out if you can say this tongue twister quickly five times, and here it is. Billy's black beagle bays bee by bull. Billy's black beagle bays bee by bull.
Billy's black beagle bays bee by bull. Billy's black beagle bays bee by bow.
Quickly.
Billy's big.
Billy's black beagle.
Billy's black beagle bays bee by bow.
Now, really quick.
Billy's bays.
No,
Billy's black beagle bays bee by bow.
All right. Thank you very, very, very much. Well. The man with the stopwatch is signaling me, and that means time is running short, so no more questions. Sorry, children. And while the right honorable judges are licking their pencils and adding up the scores, listen to Del Sharpless.
If you have unpleasing breath, you're not the exception. No, indeed. Dentists tell us this condition affects 7 out of 10 persons over 17. The cause? Well, often it's merely improperly cleaned teeth, easily overcome by this simple safeguard. Start using Colgate Dental Cream. For Colgate's does a double cleaning job. First, Colgate's penetrating foam floods crevices between teeth, helps your toothbrush whisk away food particles that often cause unpleasing breath. Second, Colgate's gentle polishing agent safely brings out natural luster and makes teeth sparkle. Two jobs, one price. Enjoy this double advantage. Tomorrow, start using Colgate Dental Cream. And now, back to Jim McWilliams.
How about sending me those questions you've been thinking up? See if you can baffle our Ask It Basket contestants. Send your questions to me, Jim McWilliams, care of the Columbia Broadcasting System, New York City. And if they're used, Colgate will award you a year's supply of Colgate Dental Cream. And here are the winners. Third place goes to Miss Selma Furman, the buyer from the Bronx. $5 to Miss Furman. Carter Strong, the student from Winchester, Virginia, second. $10 to Carter Strong. And the grand prize, $25, goes to Peter Wershing, the fireman from the And now, Miss Fisher, come right up to the microphone. Too bad you had to pick the hard ones tonight, and here's a chance to redeem yourself and get in on the prize money, too. Just answer these questions, and for each one you get right, we'll give you $1, and Del Sharbert, that handsome boy right over there on your right, is ready to give it to you right now. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's go. Now, from Clinton, Massachusetts, Miss Rose Murphy wants to know, is a peeler a bird, a policeman, or a device for paring potatoes?
A device for paring potatoes.
Right at the microphone.
A device for paring potatoes.
I'm sorry, it's a policeman in England. All right, now, from Richmond, Virginia, Ann Alsop wants to know, a farmer going to Chicago, pay attention now, concentrate. Are you concentrating?
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right, a farmer going to Chicago met 7 friends with their wives. Each wife had a child by the hand. How many people were going to Chicago?
21.
I'm very sorry. The farmer, that is correct. He was the only one going to Chicago. Oh, right. Now, here we have a chance for you to get right in the money. Now, from Newell, West Virginia, Austin H. Brown wants you to give an idea to our Colgate friends just what kind of sounds the following animals make. Now, for instance, frogs croak. Can you give an imitation of a frog? Right at the microphone. All right. Now, grasshoppers chirp.
Chirp. Chirp.
All right. Now, magpies chatter.
Can't chatter.
Can't you chatter?
No.
Oh, louder than that. Louder, chatter. All right, now, eagles scream.
Yeah!
Louder than that. Well, I'm sorry. We were trying to get you in the money here. Let me see. From Rochester, New York, Fred W. Mingus wants to know, is a pikeman, a fisherman, a musician, a soldier, or a toll gate attendant?
A toll gate attendant.
I'm very sorry. He's a soldier. I'm very, very sorry. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say goodnight and ask you to tune in next week for another Colgate Ask It Basket with new questions and new contestants and new prizes. But first, a grand letter from Miss Mary Wingarth of Denver, Colorado. She writes, Colgate Dental Cream makes my teeth so sparkling clean, I never miss a chance to smile. And after brushing my teeth, my mouth stays fresh and sweet for hours. Thanks, Mrs. Wingarth. And friends, after you try Colgate Dental Cream, I'm sure you'll continue using it for the sake of your teeth, your breath, and your smile.
And now, genial Jim McWilliams and his school bell leave us until our next Ask It Basket.
So long, children, until next week. See you then. Good night.
Daylight savings time ends Sunday, September 24th. If your community has been on standard time right along, this program will reach you 1 hour later. Otherwise, tune in next week as usual. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Keep your dials tuned to this station for Strange as It Seems, which follows immediately. WJSV, Washington.
Palm Olive Lather Cream and Palm Olive Brushless, both made with soothing olive oil for greater shaving comfort, present
Strange as It Seems.
This is Aloys Abrilla bringing you fascinating stories, which John Hicks, the famous cartoonist, has collected from every corner of the globe. Did you know that there are only 44 states in the United States? I'll give you the answer to that one before the end of the program. But first, you will hear the amazing stories of the man whose touch was gold, the most beautiful wife in America, the scientist who was traded for a racehorse, and the duel that was fought with a powder keg. And believe me, these stories are really strange. But there's nothing strange about the fact that more men use Palmolive shave cream than any other kind. Why, Palmolive is the only nationally sold shave cream made with olive oil, nature's finest skin conditioner. You get smooth, quick, clean shaves with comfort beyond your fondest dreams. Remember, both Palmolive Lather Cream and Palmolive Brushless are made with olive oil. Whichever type you buy, be sure it's Palmolive Shave Cream. Who is the world's most ingenious salesman? When did he live? Where did he live? Well, his name was Timothy Dexter. His story begins shortly after the American Revolution, when the paper money issued by the Continental Congress had little value. Citizens of the United States wanted silver and gold, and Timothy Dexter had silver and gold. In his office in Charleston, Massachusetts, one morning...
Mr. Dexter, I understand you are buying up Continental currency.
Why, don't you know that pasteboard stuff is absolutely worthless? How much of the stuff have you got?
£1,000, sir.
Well, I'll give you £100 for the lot.
Oh, that's a big loss, but... can I have it in gold, Mr. Dexter?
Very well, in gold.
People thought Timothy Dexter a fool, but Dexter was gambling on the genius of Alexander Hamilton, and he won because Hamilton solved the new nation's financial problems, established a national bank, and the almost worthless Continental currency soon had a real value. Timothy Dexter had a small fortune, but that was just the beginning. Dexter chartered a ship to sail to the West Indies. A few hours before sailing time, a clerk is talking to Mr. Dexter.
Mr. Dexter, the ship is in the harbor ready to sail, but there's no cargo available.
What? Well, I've cleared that vessel for Cuba. There's got to be a cargo. I'll tell you what. We'll load her with cats.
Cats? Cats, Mr. Dexter?
Yes, those four-legged animals that go meow. You've seen them, no doubt.
Oh, yes, sir. Cats.
Offer 10 cents each for all the cats you can get. Have them put aboard. Spread the word along the waterfront. Timothy Dexter is buying cats.
Are you the captain of this vessel?
I am.
Port of Authority of Cuba, Captain. I'm here to inspect the cargo.
Oh, yes, yes, the cargo.
What are you carrying?
What? Well, you can... Here, I'll pull up the hat. Don't blame this on me, Inspector. I just under orders, you know. There!
Cats. How many of them are there, Captain?
892, sir.
Splendid. Splendid.
Splendid? Are you balmy, Inspector?
Far from it. My government is paying $5 apiece for cats.
What does the government want with cats?
Have you not heard? Havana is overrun with rats. Rats that are eating our food, spreading disease. These cats are worth their weight in gold.
Strange as it seems, Timothy Dexter sold his cargo of cats at a handsome profit. And with the years, Timothy Dexter's fantastic ventures continued. In Dexter's office, his captain says...
Well, sir, the ship's loaded and ready to sail. Have you decided on the port?
Yes, Captain. You'll sail to Newcastle, England.
We're loaded with coal, Mr. Dexter.
Yes, I know that, Captain.
Mr. Dexter, carrying coal to Newcastle? Newcastle's the heart of the British coal industry.
You have your orders, Captain.
Right, sir. You're the owner.
One morning 4 weeks later, and across the Atlantic, Timothy Dexter's Newcastle agent comes aboard.
We're, Captain. What's Mr. Dexter sent this time?
I hate to tell you, sir.
Hey, come on. It can't be as bad as that.
I'm afraid Mr. Dexter's losing his mind. It's coal for Newcastle.
Coal? Bless Dexter's heart. The miners are rioting, and there's not a skittle of coal in the whole of Newcastle.
Strange as it seems, super salesman Timothy Dexter never missed, though he defied all the rules of business. He sent long-handled warming pans to the tropics and sold them as frying pans. He shipped a cargo of woolen mittens to the West Indies and sold them at a profit to a Scandinavian vessel that happened to be in port. Cats and coal, mittens and warming pans and paper money, they all turned into gold for Timothy Dexter, strange as it seems. Well, that story shows there's a difference in most jobs we men do. Now, some men shave in 5 minutes, others in 15. Either way, you'll shave more comfortably with Palmolive Lather Cream. Because Palmolive Lather wilts whiskers like lightning, yet stays moist for slow shavers. Even more important, Palmolive leaves your skin smooth, soft, refreshed. You see, Palmolive Lather Cream is made with olive oil, nature's finest skin conditioner. Enjoy this extra benefit at no extra cost. Tomorrow, buy Palmolive Lather Cream made with olive oil.
The most beautiful wife in America.
Who is she? A former Miss America, still a reigning beauty queen, even though it's Mrs. now? No, sir. Strange as it seems, the wife whose face and figure, which in the opinion of competent judges outclassed all others, had never entered a beauty contest before last week. In private life, she's Mrs. Armand Donnarumma of Union City, New Jersey. But for the next 12 months at least, she's Mrs. America. Will you step up to the microphone a moment, Mrs. America?
Right here?
Yes, that's right. Now then, how does it feel to know that you've been chosen the most beautiful wife in the country?
Fine.
Well, I'm a little hazy on the details of the Mrs. America contest. How is it run?
Well, it's a regular beauty contest, Mr. Havrilla, just like the contest for Miss America. Only you have to be married to get into it.
It's a rather new idea, isn't it?
Yes, sir. It was only started last year.
Well, what did they judge you for in the Mrs. America contest?
The same as the other. Your looks and, you know, your figure and all that.
Yes, and while I'm no expert, I should say they've done a very good job of judging. I wish all of you could see Mrs. America of 1939 here in the studio tonight. Mrs. Donnarumma is, I should say, about 5 feet 6 inches tall, and she weighs about 110 pounds. She has golden hair, sparkling blue eyes, and the most beautiful peaches and cream complexion you ever saw. Now tell me, Mrs. Donnarumma, were you nervous in the beauty contest?
Not very. Mostly I was worried about getting back to my job in time. I'd only asked them for 2 hours off, you see.
Oh, you have a job.
Yes, my husband and I both work.
Well, just what do you do?
I'm an elevator operator in a big New York department store. But I'm hoping that maybe this will help me get a job modeling.
I see. Now, and are there any little Donnarummas?
No, not yet.
Well, but tell me again now, how did you happen to enter the contest?
Well, it was my husband's idea.
Oh, so your husband wanted you to enter. And how does he feel now that you're Mrs. America?
Well, he feels pretty good. He says now I have to believe everything he tells me.
Oh, how's that?
Well, I've always laughed at him when he told me he'd marry the prettiest girl in the world. You know, I said he was kidding like husbands do. But now he says it's proved just as true as everything else he's ever said.
Well, so far as I can see, he was absolutely right.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mrs. America of 1939. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, strange as it seems, for Mr. and Mrs. Armand Donnarumma, that very husbandly remark, "I've got the prettiest wife in 48 states," has actually been verified by the decision of the expert judges in the Mrs. America Beauty Contest. Now listen, men, before you believe judging a beauty contest is a cinch, try it yourself sometime. And before you say all brushless shave creams are hard to spread, try Palmolive brushless. Palmolive spreads smoothly, evenly, because it's made with olive oil, doesn't lump up, dry out, or clog the razor. And best of all, Palmolive Brushless is kind to your skin because olive oil is nature's finest skin conditioner. Tomorrow, ask for Palmolive Brushless made with olive oil. From the files of John Hicks comes the amazing but true story of one of America's best-known scientists. It begins in the grim days of Reconstruction, immediately following the war between the states. The story begins in the plantation house of Moses Carver near Diamond Grove, Missouri. The time, the late 1860s. In the great plantation house, Moses Carver questions a Negro hired hand.
Now, let me get this straight, Joe. You say there was a band of those men, and they came to our land just after sundown last night.
Yes, sir. That's the truth, Mr. Carver.
Burned down my barns, will they?
Then after that, they run off all the stock down the road, and then they come and took Mary and the baby off with them.
You saw them take Mary away?
Yes, sir, and the baby.
What'd they run off with Mary for, Joe?
Plain meanness, I reckon.
What's that paper you got in your
hand? It's got writing on it.
Yeah, let me see it, Joe.
What'd it say, Mr. Carver?
Those scoundrels. Say, they'll give up Mary if I give them that chestnut racehorse.
That's a powerful good horse, Mr. Carver.
Joe, go out in the pasture and catch that horse. I'm going to give it to them.
Moses Carver delivered the racehorse, but the kidnappers never returned Mary. Nothing more was heard of her, but her baby, sick and near death, was returned. And the Carvers did what they could for the infant, nursed it back to health, had it baptized, gave it their own name, and the name of a very famous American, George Washington. Then one day in 1863, on the Missouri plantation, the young colored lad, George Washington Carver, timidly enters the study of his benefactor, Moses Carver.
Hello, George.
Mr. Carver, can I talk with you?
Sure, boy. What's on your mind?
Well, sir, I'm most 14 years old now, and I can't neither read nor write.
George, don't tell me you want to learn to read and write.
Yes, sir, Mr. Carver. I don't want to be a field hand all my life.
I see. Well, I got an old blue-back speller I'll give you, and when the words get too long, I'll help you if I can. Now, how's that?
Thank you, Mr. Carver. I'll do my best for you.
Young George Washington Carver mastered the old blue-back speller. Still, his thirst for knowledge was not satisfied. An insatiable thirst and curiosity that impelled him to leave the plantation fields.
Of course I'll teach you, but 8 miles is a long way to walk to school every day.
8 miles ain't no distance at all when you've got things you've got to learn, ma'am. You just start teaching, and I'll be there.
Say, George, what you gonna do when you go to get through high school?
I reckon I'll go to college.
College? Where you gonna get that much money?
Same as I'm doing here in Minneapolis. Work for it. Maybe wash dishes, maybe scrub floors.
George Washington Carver?
Yes, sir.
Having fulfilled the requirements laid down by the Board of Trustees, Iowa State College is happy to present to you the degree of Master of Science.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Studying by day, working by night, young George Washington Carver obtained an education few of his race possessed in the year 1896. He became associated with Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. One day during the World War, Booker T. Washington, founder of the college, entered the laboratory of the scientist.
My secretary said you wanted me to come down to your laboratory, Dr. Carver.
Yes, Mr. Washington. You remember the government report you showed me a short time ago?
You mean about the cotton crop being destroyed by boll weevil?
Yes. Then we discussed the wheat shortage.
Yes, that's right.
Our people here in the South are really facing starvation. No cotton this year, no food.
It looks very serious, Carver.
Well, I've been experimenting here, and I think I've got something. Here, taste this.
Huh?
Oh, you like it?
Mmm. Yeah, that's good. That's very good, but I don't
that's
see...
That's sweet potato bread, Mr. Washington.
Sweet potato bread?
Yes, and that's what's going to feed our people during this war. We're going to plant sweet potatoes on the cotton fields and use sweet potato and bread instead of grain. And I'm working on other uses, too. I'll find a market for our crops.
But with the harvesting of the first large sweet potato crop that was to be used as a wheat substitute, George Washington Carver's troubles really began.
Dr. Carver, the dietitians want to know exactly what food value is in this new bread.
Dr. Carver, we doctors are wondering if this bread is really digestible.
Frankly, Dr. Carver, the government doubts that it is possible to bake bread from sweet potatoes. That's why I called you to Washington.
As Dr. Carver answered all criticisms, satisfied dietitians, physicians, and the United States government, the fame of the Negro scientist grew. Then one day, from another scientist's laboratory in New Jersey, comes a telegram.
To George Washington Carver, Tuskegee Institute, Tuskegee, Alabama. I followed your work. Would be honored if you would join me in experiments at my laboratory. Name your own salary. We'll pay your expenses up here to consider proposition. Signed, Thomas A. Edison.
To Thomas A. Edison, Menlo Park, New Jersey. Thank you very much. My people need me here. There's no need for me to waste your money by coming north to say no. Signed, George Washington Carver.
Refusing the offer of Thomas A. Edison, George Washington Carver continued his work and experiments. Then a few months later in his laboratory, Booker T. Washington watches Mr. Carver as he pours a muddy solution from a test tube.
This, Mr. Washington, is an analysis of the soil on which we grew the sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Every bit of mineral has been exhausted from this soil by the sweet potato.
Well, what are we going to do?
We must issue a bulletin telling the farmers to grow peanuts.
Peanuts?
They'll revitalize the soil, and it's the only thing that will.
But man alive, Carver, peanuts aren't even listed as a crop on the government report.
They will be, Mr. Washington.
But what are people going to do with the peanut crop?
I'll have to find that out, Mr. Washington. I'll have to find a use for the peanut.
Again, Mr. Carver found the answer to the farmer's problem in his laboratory. And strange as it seems, today all the world knows that George Washington Carver's experiments with the peanut have been of enormous value to Southern agriculture. Dr. Carver is right here in the studio with me, and we'll let him tell his own story. Dr. Carver.
Thank you, Mr. Heffarella. And it's quite an experience to sit back and have your life story acted out for you.
Oh, but it's a life story with a lot more chapters yet to be written, Dr. Carver.
I certainly hope so, Mr. Heffarella. But I'm not as young as I once was. I was somewhere in the 70s on my last birthday.
Dr. Carver, I understand you've raised the peanut to new heights.
Well, the peanut industry is a $60 million business now. At Tuskegee, we've developed more than 200 products from peanuts. We've made everything from axle grease to synthetic rubber. And we're finding out new uses for the peanut constantly.
What are you working on now, Dr. Carver?
The finest use we've been able to make of peanuts is in the treatment of the after effects of infantile paralysis. That's what I'm working on now. Massages with peanut oils has worked miracles in some cases. There is a lot of work to be done, but I feel we're on the trail of something really important.
Thank you very much, Dr. Carver. You have just heard Dr. George Washington Carver, one of America's leading agriculture scientists, a man who has devoted his life to help give the agricultural South a new outlook on life. This great scientist is not ashamed of the fact that he does not know his birth date, and strange as it seems, he was once traded for a racehorse. Friends, you can't shave one whisker without touching the blade to your skin. Therefore, I suggest Palmolive Shave Cream made with olive oil, because olive oil is nature's finest skin conditioner. You'll enjoy smooth shaves, plus real skin comfort. Both Palmolive Lather Cream and Palmolive Brushless are made with olive oil, but cost no more. So take your choice. Just be sure it's Palmolive Shave Cream. Dueling is not an American sport. But when an American just has to fight a duel, you can trust him to find an unusual way of doing it. And that's just what the American patriot, General Israel Putnam, did when he made the most unusual choice of weapons in the history of dueling. As our story opens, Putnam was in command of a revolutionary garrison near the Hudson River when one of his soldiers approached him.
General Putnam, we're in for a bit of trouble.
Edward, trouble? We've had trouble in infinite variety. Now, what's the new nuisance?
This redcoat officer you paroled, Major Hawks. He's parading around town declaring you're a coward.
Coward, eh? Mustn't let the men think I'm a coward.
But what can you do, General Putnam? Challenge him?
Challenge him? To a duel? And to which I'm surprised, of course. If he should happen to challenge me, well, naturally. But suppose you have a little chat with this redcoat. Come along, come on.
There's the major now, General.
So it is. Red-faced chap, isn't he? Face almost as red as his jacket. Comes to drinking too much port after dinner. Shouldn't drink too much port after dinner, Royce.
Here he comes, General. Swaggering as if he were cock of the walk instead of a parole prisoner.
Cock of the walk, eh? Gives me a splendid idea. Good afternoon, Major. May I have a word with you?
What word would you want with me, rebel?
I've heard you compared me to a mouse, a frightened mouse.
And if I have?
Why, I was just thinking how strange that I, too, was just comparing you to...
Have you dared call me a mouse?
No, not at all. Rather a rooster, a strutting, red-combed rooster.
You're insulting, sir.
Perhaps you'd oblige us by crowing.
You've insulted me, sir. I demand satisfaction.
Eh? You're suggesting a duel?
If you're a gentleman, you'll give me a chance to wipe out this insult.
Very well, Major, but since I'm the challenge party, I have the choice of weapons.
Of course.
So be it. Under the old oak just outside the garrison gate at sunrise tomorrow. Agreed?
Agreed.
True to his word, early the following morning, General Putnam was waiting for the British officer under the old oak just outside the garrison gates. General Putnam, seated on a small keg, is approached by one of his seconds.
General Putnam?
Sir?
Major Holtz is here. Now then, what about the weapons?
Weapons. Oh, yes. Of course, weapons. I'm sitting on the weapons.
What?
This gunpowder keg.
But, General, this is highly irregular.
What's this nonsense about weapons? Swords or pistols? All the same to me.
No, Major. Neither swords nor pistols. Since a duel is a test of courage, well, there's room on this powder keg for both of us to sit.
Sir, this is nonsense.
You'll note there's a fuse attached. May burn 10 minutes, may burn 5, or less.
You're mad, General.
Not at all. We'll both sit on the keg. I light the fuse, or you may light it if you wish. First man to run away... I should say the first man to give up his seat on the keg is the loser. Simple, eh?
General Putnam, this is highly irregular. There is nothing in the code.
The code says the challenge party has the choice of weapons.
Well, it's crude and ungentlemanly. And I'll go through with it.
Splendid. Pray be seated.
It's madness. Madness, I tell you.
Would you care to light the fuse? No? Well, then permit me. Yeah, this torch will do it.
Sheer insanity.
I quite agree, Major. But two otherwise intelligent men should settle some childish dispute with pistols or cold steel. It's sheer insanity.
How long will that fuse burn?
Well, hard to tell. Fuses such as we have are very poor quality. Some burn fast and some burn slow.
I believe we have a warm day, Major. We're both likely to be blown to bits.
By the way, Major, there's said to be splendid fishing in the brook.
You're mad, sir. We're both on the edge of eternity.
Eternity? Oh, yes. The theologians have some very interesting theories about eternity. There's one school that holds... Fuse's getting a bit short, isn't it?
You fool. Die if you insist. But I can't stand it! I can't stand it!
Come back, Major. Come back. There's nothing to worry about.
Nothing to worry about? You'll be blown to bits.
Well, that's a matter of opinion, Major. You see, this cask here is full of onions.
The Major couldn't take it, and so General Putnam won his curious duel. Strange as it seems, the American general saved his honor by fighting a duel with a keg of onions. Now for a quick flight from those dueling days to the days of the modern man. Here's an interesting letter from Mr. I. Braun of New York City. He writes, "Palm olive brushless not only leaves my face smooth and free from irritation, but also seems to help my razor catch and shave off every little whisker on my entire face. Well, thanks, Mr. Braun. And gentlemen, you can expect the same happy shaves if you'll try one tube of palm olive brushless made with olive oil. I'll amend that to include palm olive lather cream, too, because it's also made with olive oil. But just in case you don't like palm olive shave cream, send the empty tube to us and we refund your money. Tomorrow, then, buy palm olive shave cream, lather or brushless. Both are made with olive oil. And now, since it's almost time to say goodnight, I want to tell you about those 44 states I mentioned at the beginning of the program. Yes, there are only 44 states in the United States. Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Kentucky are officially known not as states, but as commonwealths, a term which originally stood for a greater amount of self-government than that held by a state. It's technical, but it's true. Next week, John Hicks brings you the amazing true story of the cobbler who became a doctor overnight and operated on over 600 people. Presented by the two famous shave creams made with soothing olive and palm oils for greater shaving comfort. Palm Olive Lather Cream, Palm Olive Brushless. You know, daylight saving time ends Sunday, September 24th. If your community has been on standard time right along, this program will reach you 1 hour later. Otherwise, tune in next week as usual. And so, until next Thursday night, this is Aloys Ervilla bidding each of you a good, good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WJSB, Washington. Columbia. 8:55 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time, and Columbia and its affiliated stations present Elmer Davis and the news.
On this 21st day of the war, the talking was more important than the shooting, with the exception of the shots that killed Prime Minister Călinescu of Romania. President Roosevelt addressed Congress, convened in special session, and asked it to repeal the embargo provisions of the neutrality law, which he regarded as vitally dangerous to American neutrality, American security, and American peace. Premier Daladier of France, in a broadcast, accused the Germans of planning to dismember France as they have dismembered Poland, and devoted so much of his speech to combating assertions of German propaganda that France has been dragged in by England that the suspicion arises that this talk may possibly have had some effect. We must be finished once and for all, he said, with the reign of force. And Lord Halifax, the British foreign minister, told the House of Lords that it would be wise to hold our judgment in suspense about Russia. Mr. Roosevelt's speech failed to move the isolationist senators, 24 of whom met afterward and said that they would go on fighting repeal. They hoped to add at least 10 or 12 other senators to their group. Much of the president's speech was devoted to an ironic comparison of the prohibition of exports of implements of war in the present law and the legality of the export of raw materials and semi-finished products, which could be very useful to belligerents. If those who want to retain the embargo were consistent, he said, they would extend it to cut off cotton, copper, and wheat as well. But as some of you may have heard Mr. Kaltenborn reporting earlier this evening, Senator Nye is apparently the only isolationist who wants to go that far. When and if the embargo is repealed, said Mr. Roosevelt, the government will clearly and definitely insist that American citizens and American ships keep out of the zones of conflict, and will also reenact the cash and carry provisions. But from his language, this is apparently, so far as he is planning it, contingent on repeal. The president also said that while he hopes this special session of Congress will confine itself to these matters only, he has asked the leaders of both parties in both houses of Congress to stay in Washington until the regular session opens on January 3rd, promising to consult them frequently on foreign affairs and to reconvene Congress if it seems necessary. The president challenged the right of the isolationists to call themselves the peace bloc. We all belong to that, he said. The only question is as to ways and means. He said he believed we could succeed in our efforts not to be drawn into the war, and that all our policies must be guided by one single hard-headed thought, keep America out. But he warned that darker periods may lie ahead, and in closing said that the American republics are the joint heirs of European civilization and must maintain in the Western world a citadel where that civilization may be kept alive. The Romanian premier was assassinated by members of the Iron Guard, the Romanian fascist and anti-Semitic organization, which he has repressed with great severity. A considerable number of them seem to have been in the plot, for immediately afterward they seized the Bucharest radio station for a few minutes and apparently tried to give the call for a rebellion. General Argeșanu, commander of the Bucharest Army Corps, was appointed premier in Mr. Călinescu's place and began bringing more troops into the city. And apparently any uprising that may have been planned didn't come off. The Iron Guard has been sympathetic with the Germans, and the Romanian government, obviously wanting to keep out of trouble, immediately declared that the killing had no international political significance. The German shortwave broadcast tonight disagrees with that. It blames the killing on Polish and British agents who are said to have done it in the hope that it would be blamed on the Germans. This recalls the German assertion that the Athenia was sunk by a British submarine so that it would be blamed on the Germans. Călinescu, on the whole, had been friendly to the French and British, though in Romania's present situation, of course, neutrality is imperatively necessary, if possible. The story with still more interesting implications comes from Romania. Police searching the houses of Germans living near the Polish border are said to have found instructions as to what these Germans living in Romania should do when German troops had pushed through Poland and appeared on the frontier. But when Poland was overrun, it was not German but Russian troops that occupied the sections of Poland adjoining Romania. This is no particular consolation for the Romanians, who have reason to fear the Russians quite as much as the Germans, if not more so. But it does suggest the possibility that in this part of Poland, the Russian intervention may have gone a little farther than the Germans expected. No more has been heard today of the operations of the Russian Navy in the Baltic, but Warsaw still holds out against the Germans. Every night we report that, it comes a little nearer, looking like a miracle. On the Western Front, there has been little action, and Premier Daladier told his people today that the French High Command avoids every temptation to send its men forward recklessly to be slaughtered.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.